Blog Talk Radio.
Trek Talking. All things Star Trek and beyond. Thursday night, 7:30 to 9:30. All hailing frequencies are open. iTunes, iHeart, Stitcher, Spotify, Amazon, and wherever fine podcasts are found. Trek Talking. Boldly going wherever your mind is willing to go.
Blog Talk Radio.
Jean-Luc, Geordi specs, mysteries on the holodecks, asteroids, triple droids, telepathic betazoids, transporter, deadly claw, visitor from L.A. Law, photons, no Kirk, captain has gone berserk, shuttlecraft, Council Troy, Dr. Crusher's little boy, Klingon rights, parasite, new heights, phaser fight, Data's head, Tasha's dead, Riker's hanging by a thread, celebration, transformations, everyone to battle
station. Next generation on your favorite station. We can start the series, but when we are gone, it'll feel beyond. We can start the series. It's the next generation on your favorite station. We can start the series.
Yes, good evening, people. You are listening to Stunt Trek. Don't let the Star Trek theme song from Trek Talking and Beyond throw you off. This is Stunt Trek. It is Sunday, and yes, it's 7:30 instead of 7 o'clock. As you can tell, there's all kinds of technical difficulties. Blog Talk Radio, just like Facebook and Instagram had their problems, now Blog Talk is having theirs. We had our show all set as usual. I went to log on and was told, we're sorry, you have no show tonight. And I had to scramble to try to get a show set up. And the best I could do was 7:30, and for some reason, it wouldn't let me set our usual theme song, which is the Vulcan music, and Blog Talk just used that song because that's the song that we use for 99% of our shows. So I apologize for the half-hour delay and for the wrong intro song, but don't worry because the Leslie Hoffman, stunt woman extraordinaire, is here with us. We will be talking about aliens and alien makeup for the next hour, so we'll be here until 8:30 instead of 8 o'clock. Our phone number here is 646-668-2433, the same as it's always been, 646-668-2433. If you have a question for the Leslie Hoffman, give us a call, and she'll be more than happy to answer your question. So I apologize for the delay, and I apologize for all the errors that are going on, but I think we got it straightened out, and we're back. So let's get down to some stunt treks. How you doing tonight, Leslie?
Oh, I'm doing fine. Well, you're the new Scotty. You know, it's like, the ship is about to blow up, or we can't get the ship moving. Can you, you know, how many minutes will it take for you to fix the ship? We'll do it in half an hour.
I'm giving you all she's got, a captain. I had to scramble when I went. We just got back from Freakopolis Geekery. We were playing a game of Star Trek Adventures. Came back. We had our dinner. I went to log on to the show, and the computer says, you have no show scheduled for tonight. And I was like, what? I know there's a show scheduled tonight. I scheduled it. Oh, what a nightmare. I had to scramble to get something done. But, hey, I did it, and we're here. And the number is 646-668-2433. If you have a question about Cardassians or Klingons or any alien makeup, give us a call, 646-668-2433, and Leslie will be more than happy to answer your questions. So, Leslie, it's been quite a change from the weather we've had lately. I had my windows open, and I was practically wearing shorts and T-shirts on Friday, and today it's freezing cold again. The heat's back on. What's going on?
I know. That's, well, I wrote to you about, you know, how wonderful it was to see the water coming down through the ice, cutting through the ice, and spring is on its way and this and that. And then the next morning I look out the window and it's just snowing. I mean, we were having a blizzard up here.
Wow, Mother Nature just doesn't want to let go.
What's that?
Mother Nature just does not want to let go.
No. Yeah, I still, and I think at least for up here, we're back into a cold spell. I don't remember seeing anything going up in temperature this week.
I know, it's going to be in the 30s. Oh, boy.
A heat wave.
So, what do you say we talk about some alien makeup? How does that sound?
Sounds good to me.
So I guess the first one that's going to pop in my mind, of course, because anytime we're going to talk about aliens, there's my alien, and we know who that is, Klingons.
Klingons!
So obviously you double B'Elanna Torres, who was a Klingon. So on a day that you got a call to, and you had to double Roxanne as B'Elanna on Star Trek Voyager, what would be your typical day? How long would it take to get into the B'Elanna makeup and stuff? And what would your typical – walk us through your typical day on a day that you had to be B'Elanna.
Well, on a day that I'd have to be – I would have to be B'Elanna, I would have what they call was an early call. They call it call times. So I might have to get to the studio at about 5 a.m. because it takes it takes about an hour and a half or more to get into the makeup, but that's not even including getting into the costume. So, I mean, you're looking probably all total 2 to 2.5 hours before I can even walk on the set, you know, to do my scenes. So, you know, what happens is I lived in the San Fernando Valley, which is above where Paramount is. Paramount is in Hollywood. So I'd have to drive down from San Fernando Valley to Paramount, get on the lot, get my stunt people have their own stunt pads. Those are not on the set for us. So, you know, I park my car, get my stunt bag, walk to my dressing room. Stunt people are treated like actors are treated. We all get dressing rooms. Now, if you're star of the show, you get a trailer. You get this huge, like, 40-foot trailer or something. For stunt people, what they were called teardrop trailers, and that's exactly what they were, sort of like a little oval-shaped, teeny dressing room. But it was big enough to, you know, you were comfortable in it. Anyways, so I drop off my stunt bag, and due to unions, you cannot just sit in a chair and have someone do everything and get you into makeup. Once in my trailer, I would have to put on this, like, T-shirt that had a cutaway neck that was huge enough that once I was completely ready to get into my costume, I could take this T-shirt off without messing up the makeup but ruining the hair. So that would be the first thing I would do, is put on the T-shirt. Then I'd go over to the hair department, and they would have to, whether they pin-curled my hair up or braided it and pinned it up, then they would put a wig cap over my hair, but they wouldn't put the wig on yet. Once I had the wig cap on, I had to go over to the makeup department and have them glue on the prosthetics that Torres, you know, the ridges, and I believe there was a nose piece for Torres. And plus, aesthetics are not, what should I say, Klingon color. I mean, so first they have to glue them onto you, but then they have to take makeup and blend the prosthetics and your face to the same color. you know, lipstick, whatever, you know, the makeup would be. And this all takes a lot of time. I mean, this is not a, you know, slipshod deal. I mean, they're very precise on the makeup. So once that was done, I would have to go back to hair, and they would put the wig on. But believe it or not, Torres's eyebrows are considered hair. So it actually was the hair department that would glue the eyebrows on the prosthetics. It wasn't the makeup department that would put the eyebrows on. Let's see. What? Then I'd go back to the dressing room and get into my costume. And on a normal day, I'd be ready to go. But on the episode Blood Fever, where she had her repelling suit, or I don't know what to call it, that silver suit where she had it down around her waist, her arms were exposed. And believe it or not, there are multiple makeup departments, and the people that make up your face do not make up your body. So a different person had to come into my dressing room and paint my arms to the right color. So that, like I say, that was just getting ready. I mean, when you're done in the day, it still takes, you have to go through the same procedure. I mean, to get the prosthetics off is 45 minutes, but... You know, they still have to take the wig off and take the wig cap off and, you know, unpin your hair. And so many, many hours are just getting ready and finishing up for the day.
So when you're doubling B'Elanna Torres, is that a prosthetic made from her head and they just fit it to yours, or are they all custom made?
No, the prosthetics was, generic. The prosthetics, the forehead was generic, and let's say they might have to trim the edges a little bit to make it fit properly, but no, it wasn't molded, like her piece wasn't molded to her head and my piece wasn't molded to my head. But the interesting thing is I got hand-me-downs. If you notice, B'Elanna's hair was changing from season to season. Like one season it sort of had waves in it. Other seasons it was a little straighter but maybe kind of curled under, you know, right at the very bottom. And what they would do is I would get her last season's wig. I feel like the wigs, are you ready for this? The wig was like a $4,000 or $5,000 wig. How's that? Yeah. So like you say, what they would do, as opposed to making two $4,000 wigs in one season, I would get the hair piece that she wore or the wig that she wore the season before. And they were able to match it to her current wig.
Wow. What are these wigs made out of? Real human hair? Wow.
I guess so. Well, just kind of, again, Hollywood, it can be really crazy. There was a movie called Silent Movie, Mel Brooks, and there was a scene where it was a guy at a newspaper stand, and they were going to throw all these bundles of newspapers, you know, on top of them. Well, if you really threw a true bundle of newspapers on top of somebody, multiple bundles of newspapers on somebody, you'd really hurt them because they would weigh a ton. So the prop department and glued, you know, the front edge and the back edge to like a box, and then, you know, maybe a newspaper on top and a newspaper on bottom. And that was like $5,000 per bundle of newspapers that were going to be thrown on this guy. I mean, it's almost like the government with, I forget, the $900 toilet seat or screwdriver or something like that.
Wow.
Yeah. I mean, it's so like you say, I don't know what company was making these wigs, but that's how much they were charging.
Wow.
That's
pretty heavy. Now, were you able to, do you actually have any of the stuff from the set? Like, do you actually have a Klingon head or anything like that?
I don't have a Klingon head. Because they're always trying to save the prosthetics. For a while, I had some used Vulcan ears that they had thrown away, and I kept them, but my move from California to New York, you know, I lost them. I mean, it's so sad how much memorabilia take with me from California to New York. You know, you're talking about Klingon head. Is my friend Tom Morga was like one of the first Klingons in the newer type Klingon, not the TOS Klingon, but the movie Klingon. And they actually did make a, what they call a life mask, or, you know, a head of Tom. And they used Tom's head to create the Klingon that you saw in the feature films. And I believe Tom still has that head at his house in California.
Wow, that is really cool. That Star Trek motion picture. He was the Klingon that was standing behind the captain talking to him, as which was played by Mark Leonard. So he was the Klingon right behind Mark Leonard, who was telling him what was going on.
Correct. And he also doubled Leonard Nimoy. He doubled Spock. So he's battling himself.
Well, we definitely got to track him down and get him on the show.
I just spoke to him on Saturday, and I'm trying to get him to commit to a date in April, hopefully.
Oh, that would be great. That would be fun.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I mean, there's Tom would need to be on the show multiple times because, I mean, whether you want to talk about Klingons or whether you want to talk about feature films or whether you want to talk about TNG, DS9, Voyager, Enterprise. I mean, Tom has been almost every alien possible, other than he's like 6'2", so he can't really be a Ferengi. He'd be a Ferengi with a thyroid condition.
That's a big Ferengi.
Right. He took steroids or something. But,
oh,
you know,
boy.
Well, just talking about with the Klingons is that, you know, it's the same thing, is that they would have to go to hair and get a wig cap, and then go to makeup and get the prosthetics put on, and then back to hair to get the Klingon wig put on and get the eyebrows put on. This is a question I guess you'd have to ask Tom, is that I don't know if the stunt people had the Klingon teeth or not. So that's a good question for Tom.
And we're going to take a quick station identification break. But when we come back, I'm going to talk to Leslie about, we know how long it took to become a Klingon, but just how long does it take to turn into a human once you're a Klingon. We're going to find out from Leslie right after this station identification break. Don't touch your dial. Don't go away. We'll be right back in 30 seconds.
Hi, this is Jamie from Trek Talking, here to invite you to join us for the best sci-fi themed podcast. Our elite team of Trek-sperts are here to discuss Star Trek and sci-fi themed content. Call 646-668-2433 Thursday nights from 7:30 to 9:30 p.m. Eastern Coast Time. We can't wait to hear from you. Live long and prosper.
And we're back. And that number that Jamie mentioned, 646-668-2433, is the same number you call for Trek Talking, for Stunt Trek, and Comic Corner. We're all the same big, happy family. So 646-668-2433. If you have a question for the Leslie Hoffman, stuntwoman extraordinaire, give us a call right now, and she can answer your questions very happily. So, Leslie, we know how long it took to become B'Elanna Torres, but once you were B'Elanna Torres, what was it like to go back from being B'Elanna Torres to becoming the Leslie Hoffman?
Well, now it's in reverse. So you would go to hair first and have the $4,000 wig removed. I don't remember if they took the wig cap off and undid my hair at that point, because it seems like if you went up to makeup and they started trying to take the prosthetics off, my hair might be in the way. So I might have still been in the wig cap. I'm just I have a brain freeze here at the moment. So then you go to makeup, and because they want to save the prosthetics, the way they just won't rip it off your face. And well, let me. The way it normally, the headpiece was, or the forehead was put on, was almost like what you've heard of tack welding. That it was glue welding. It's like they would put dots of glue, like on all around the outside of your forehead, and glue the piece on. I do have one day or story when they had a new makeup person in the department, and they proceeded to glue my whole forehead and stick the prosthetic on, and it took them like over an hour to get this piece off of me after the end of the day, because that's not the way you put it on. But what they do is, you know, again, it's glue. So they have a solvent, and they have just a teeny little paintbrush, probably, I think paintbrush, little, you know, like watercolor paintbrushes, you know. And I don't know if they're sized by number or whatever, but I mean, barely, whatever, 10, 15 little pieces of whatever makes up a paintbrush. And they're dipping it in the solvent, and they're just kind of gently peeling up the forehead and, you know, just trying to dab the solvent in there to loosen it up so they don't rip the prosthetic. So you know, it definitely could take 45 minutes or more just to get that off. And then, like you say, if I was still wearing the wig cap, that means that once they got the prosthetic off me, I had to go back down to hair and get the wig cap off and have them unpin my hair. I mean, again, well, like you say, it is unions. It isn't like it's the end of the day and you start ripping off wigs and ripping off makeup. I mean, that is a definite no-no. That would definitely be frowned upon if you did that.
Wow. I know this might be a dumb question. I know when I dress up as a Klingon, I have my wig actually pinned to the Klingon forehead, and I have a piece of like a rubber elastic band that I put around my head to hold it on. I don't glue anything on me. I just put the band on there to tight enough to hold it on. And the wig and the prosthetic are all one piece. So how did they hide the seam between the prosthetic and the hair if it wasn't all one piece?
Well, in makeup terms, they just call it blending. I mean, it's like how do they cover the line of the prosthetics from where the prosthetics ends and my face is still exposed? You know, it's just a matter of makeup and just blending it real good. And I think the wig, you know, the wig kind of came down over the top of the prosthetics, you know, the top part of the prosthetics. So it wasn't like there was where my prosthetics would end, my skin, and then the wig. I mean, it was the prosthetics and then immediately the wig.
Okay, so the wig hung a little bit, covered that top seam just a little bit.
Right, right. And Klingons, whether you're Taurus, whether you're one of the warriors, you know, there's the long hair. I know that some Klingons had the hair pulled back, but you know, you had hair on the side and hair on the top. That like I say, well, it just blended. They made it work. I guess I could say it's not my department. I don't know what movie magic they did, but they did it well. it's interesting. I mean, you know, like Bajoran, all you have is a little nose piece on, you know, on the ridge of your nose. So that went fairly quickly. Cardassian, that was definitely 2 hours or more. There was the Kazons. That's an interesting story. It isn't necessarily makeup. It's more a hair story. Is when they originally introduced the Kazons, those, I don't know, looked like rocks in their hair. Do you remember them?
Yeah, I never, they were like Klingons having a bad hair day.
Right, right. Well, those original wigs, those pieces of rock or whatever they were supposed to be actually were solid, and the stuntmen were falling on it, and you know, well, no one got injured per se, but it was painful to fall on top of this solid piece that's in your hair. So the next season they made the wigs with probably the same material that the prosthetics are made out of, you know, more of a rubber instead of something solid. So when the stunt people were falling, they weren't knocking themselves out with these pieces of rock. But let's see. I'm looking at my cheat list here. Borgs, that was, you know, because every Borg was different. So, you know, some would have like that kind of telescope eye or an eye with a little thinner bobber sticking out of it, or and you know, they had claws as opposed to, you know, or they, you know, they might have one hand but the other arm might have a claw on the end of it. So, I mean, it was great being different aliens. I mean, and I'm kind of talking for all stunt people now. But again, you know, you have a script that says you're supposed to have a fight or you're supposed to fall down or whatever. I mean, some of these costumes just couldn't take stunt work. One season of Voyager, they were going to have this alien called the Swarm, but this alien was basically completely like a foam rubber suit, and it was like every time the stuntmen would accidentally hit the corner of you know, a panel in on, you know, on Voyager, it would rip the suit. It would rip into the rubber. So they did one season, or well, not one season, I'm sorry, one episode with the Swarm, where they were going to have the Swarm as the alien for the season, and they just realized they it was going to be too expensive. I mean, you know, it just wasn't going to work. But
wow.
Yeah, I mean, it's, and then kind of talking about costumes, like you say, even like the Klingons, I mean, and you have a costume, is that on the toe part? I mean, you know, that stunt guys have to fight in these, like, motorcycle boots that have this hook on the end of the toe. I mean, it was a lot of fun, but sometimes wardrobe and makeup just made it so, I mean, they didn't do it on purpose, but you know, it wasn't, it ended up not being feasible a lot of times.
Now,
we're talking
about the TV shows right now, but you also worked on Alien Nation, the movie, with James Caan in it. Now, is there a difference between makeup calls for a movie versus makeup calls for a TV show, or are they basically all the same?
Well, I was a human in that, but Tom was one of the aliens. So, again, I guess that's a question for Tom of how long it took. I would say, you know, with aliens, whether television shows, whether movies, it's still going to take the same amount of time to get a person into makeup. So, like I say, whether feature film or whether episodic television, it just is going to take that long. I mean, you just can't hurry it.
You know, when you're watching it on a 60-foot movie screen, it's going to be a lot less forgiving than a TV screen would be, in my opinion.
Yeah, I
understand what
you're saying.
You know, I would think that if the slightest mistake or not blending properly or whatever it might be in a movie, you're going to notice that right away. Whereas my TV screen, yeah, I'm not really going to notice it that much because it's so much smaller. So I would think that it would take longer in a movie because they want to make sure it's absolutely totally perfect. But maybe they're all the same and there really is no difference. I don't know.
Well, actually, you know, I was going to, this was something I was going to wrap up with, but I'll talk about it right now, is that, so on Star Trek Discovery, you have Doug Jones, who is Saru, but he was also the amphibian man in The Shape of Water. So, I don't know. It again, you got television, you got a feature film, and I still say that you got to do it right for both television and feature film. Well, nowadays you got whatever 65-inch television screens, 70-something television screens. I mean, media is very unforgiving now. I mean, you can't have a mistake. Well, like if you watch the original Star Trek, you might actually see the line between Spock's ear and Leonard Nimoy's ear. You know, you might see a slight color difference, but nowadays, I mean, they can't even begin to do something like that. They gotta make sure it's absolutely perfect.
Well, yeah, because with the lines of resolution and HD and super HD and whatnot that we have today, like Star Trek Discovery, I think if you're looking at Saru's makeup on Star Trek Discovery on your 65-inch plasma screen HD curved TV screen, and they were to release Star Trek Discovery in the movies, I really don't think you would notice a difference between that because it's already full high definition. But like you said, the original Star Trek, you can actually, you know, if you look carefully, you can see coffee stains on Leonard Nimoy's uniform. You can see a lot of flaws that show up when they transferred everything and remastered it into HD. Those old, you know, those old 35 millimeter films didn't transfer well. And you do notice a lot of those things that you never noticed before. But you know what? That was the 60s, and I don't hold that against them. That's just the time.
Yeah, no, I...
You know?
Hey, believe it or not, I still love the original Planet of the Apes. I don't care whether you saw the actors' real teeth or not. I mean, it was amazing that Roddy McDowell with... And that was the beginning of prosthetics. That was the beginning of, you know, gluing things on people's face. What a brilliant actor to bring this ape to life.
And you know what? Leslie?
I mean, again, I don't care that you might see a double set of teeth. I mean, you know,
1968 was the first Planet of the Apes movie. Was 1968. They made five movies. And in 1973-74, they made a Planet of the Apes TV series, which ran for one full season. And even now, once in a while, of course, and then they made the 2001 Planet of the Apes, then they made the whole new Planet of the Apes trilogy, which just wrapped up last year. But even through all that, I still think that Roddy McDowell and the original Planet of the Apes, you could put that on today, right now, and watch that right now, and that movie still holds up through the test of time. Those makeups that they made in that movie are just as good today as they were in the 60s. I have no problem when I watch that movie of fully being immersed in that world and really believing that Roddy McDowell is an ape. The makeup they did was so good. Even for the 60s, even by today's standards, they did a phenomenal job with that. They really, really, really did.
I mean, you got to realize anything from the 60s and before, you didn't have CGI, you didn't have motion capture actors. I mean, that came later. You know, like in Forrest Gump, the lieutenant, when he loses the leg, they just kind of blue screen the leg out. But they used a computer. Now, back in the 50s, if you had Long John Silver and Treasure Island, I mean, they would just take the actor's leg and tape it up behind them, you know, have them bend their leg and just try to hide it behind the other leg or behind your leg. So you got to give a lot of credit to what they were able to accomplish before computers ever came into being. You know, and then
speaking of computers, I do think that sometimes computers can be overused. I have nothing against computers and CGI, not at all. But I'll give you a perfect example. In 1982, John Carpenter made a movie called The Thing. It was a remake of the original Thing, but in 1982 he made The Thing, and it was all done with puppets and makeup and practical effects. Classic, classic movie. They remade that movie in 2017, and they did all the special effects with CGI and very little practical effects with puppets and robots and things of that nature. And even though the new version was visually much more stimulating and looked much more better because of the HD quality and the money they spent on the CGI, I prefer the original one. And when I watch the new one, it jumps off the screen at me and screams, CGI, CGI. And I just, you know, sometimes if CGI is used too much, it doesn't work. It needs to be used in the right dosage in order to fool your eye. Would you agree?
Yeah. Well, for me, you know, I try to watch a show to watch the story, but I can get sidetracked if I see something wrong or whatever. And like Spider-Man, you know, when he's swinging and flipping through the air and all that kind of stuff, you know, I'm going, that's CGI. You know, it's obviously not human anymore. And it just,
exactly.
To me, it takes away from it.
So we're going to take another quick station identification break. Don't touch your dial. We'll be right back after this quick 30-second break.
This is Chris from Trek Talking and Beyond, here to invite you to join us for the best science fiction-themed podcast on the Internet. Our elite team of Trexperts are here to discuss Star Trek and other sci-fi-related content, and we want to hear from you. Dial 646-668-2433. On Thursday nights from 7:30 to 9:30 p.m. on East Coast time, hailing frequencies are always open, and we'll get you on the air to share your opinions. We have faith you will call.
And we're back with the Leslie Hoffman, stunt woman extraordinaire. And we're talking about CGI versus makeup and visual. And, you know, I think if it's used properly and if it's used in the right doses, I think CGI can work. But, you know, I don't think anything can ever really beat the real thing if it's done properly.
No.
You know, perfect example, in 1980 when they made Star Wars, The Empire Strikes Back, they used a puppet for Yoda that Frank Oz did the voice for. And when they made the new Star Wars movies, they digitized them and used a CGI Yoda. Right away, I was like, oh, my God, that's not Yoda. It just didn't move right. It didn't look right. Visually, it was stunning, but it lost part of its appeal. And oddly enough, the funny part is when they made The Last Jedi last year, in an attempt to make it as authentic as possible, they went back to Lucasfilm and they pulled out the original Yoda that they used in the 1980 movie and used that in the movie and didn't digitize Yoda at all. It was the actual puppet from the movie, and fans complained that Yoda looked ridiculous. I thought he looked spectacular. So it just goes to show you, you know, you can't please them all, Leslie. You can't please all the people all the time, so you can only be happy with some of the people some of the time, right?
Right. I mean, again, I don't know. It's like Ray Harryhausen with King Kong. I mean, you're talking about, I think, 1933, and what he did to animate King Kong, or the skeleton warriors in, I think it's Jason and the Argonauts. I mean, that man was way ahead of his time. And this is, again, pre-computers. You're talking about Yoda. I mean, now you're talking about Jim Henson and Frank Oz and the Muppets. I mean, those guys could make a puppet look absolutely real. I mean, I guess I've read articles, you know, that when they had the Muppet Show, people and the guest stars, I mean, they'd really start talking to the Muppet because they truly believed this Muppet was real. I mean, that's how good these puppeteers were.
Wait a minute. Wait. Are you telling me that there's no such thing as Kermit the Frog?
You didn't know that? Yes. I think Yoda was done by Frank Oz, or I think Jim had already passed away, or we'd have to look that up. But Yoda's a Muppet.
Yep.
Oh no, I'm ruined.
I'm destroyed. I'm crushed for life. No, but I do
it's
think I do
easy
think that
being
the,
green.
Yeah. But you're right.
No, yeah,
I do think that.
Well, like Labyrinth. I mean, you know, that was all Jim Henson and all those were all technically Muppets, or they were Jim Henson creations. Yoda was, like you say, from the Henson studio.
Yep, he definitely was. And, you know.
And his eyes were, they took Einstein's eyes, or they, you know, to make him look wise, they decided to recreate Einstein's eyes and that to give him that knowledgeable look.
And it worked.
Yeah.
Very well.
No, yeah, I would have to go back and see who voiced him, but I think it was Frank Oz.
I think you're right. I think you're right. I think it was Frank Oz that voiced Yoda.
Yeah. So.
I think you're right.
No, it's. You know, it's like well, and now we're kind of jumping all over the place. Like again, CGI. Like Pirates of the Caribbean. I can't think of. I don't know if it was whatever, the bad guy pirate that had the tentacles. You know, I mean, they had the actor do the scene, but then they put the tentacles in after the fact. This is, you know, where they call the motion capture, is that they would put these, like, dots on your face and you'd film the scene, but then they would run it through a computer, and where the dots were, you know, they would add the tentacles and make them kind of move around.
Now, Leslie, when you were working on Star Trek, during your days on Star Trek, I'm not sure how far back that goes, but did they do anything like similar to that or anything like that when you were on Star Trek? Did they do like a lot of green screening and motion stuff like that on Star Trek, or was it all just Leslie, fall off this cliff, Leslie, do this, do that?
Well, now we're going to split hairs, is that the green screen was used to create maybe the background of a planet or a vortex or a black hole or something. But it was never used to enhance an alien. It wasn't used for a face. So no, the budget would not allow, at least, you know, in the 90s, the budget would not allow CGI for alien makeup or being an alien. It was all... the makeup department and the actors. And definitely original Star Trek, you know, that's why there weren't that much, you know, Klingons were just painted a darker color and maybe had a beard or something like that. I mean, there was no budget back then to speak of.
Right.
I mean, it was still very expensive to do it, but there was no budget for... like the salt monster or the Gorn, that was like a solid piece suit. I mean, you know, they just zipped the actor into it.
So
it wasn't even like gluing pieces onto you.
Let me ask you a question while I've got you here. I know for our fans that don't know this, Leslie joins us on Trek Talking on Thursday night when we talk about stuff like this. But I know some of you people might not be able to listen to Trek Talking, or maybe you're just not aware of it. So I'm going to kind of double up and ask Leslie a question that we've already talked about, but for you guys. So speaking about the Talosians and TOS, what did you think about the Talosians from TOS versus the Talosians that were reimagined for the most recent episode of Star Trek, if memory serves, when they went back to Talos IV? So you have the 2019 version of Talos IV singing plants and Talosians versus the 1964 version of the same exact thing. Do you think they did, you know, good in the way they tried to reproduce that for today?
I think so. I mean, again, you're talking about what did the audience accept in the 1960s, and I think the Philogians that were in the 1960s, you know, I still love them today. They're highly recognizable. I love them. Today you have people that I'll say expects more. I mean, they might start laughing at 1960s makeup. So the Talosians that were used in 2019 were also acceptable. You know, I had no problem with them. But I'm not going to make a statement that I love the 1960s better than I like the 2019s, or I like the 2019s better than I like the 1960s. They are what they were for that time period.
I agree with you completely. The original Talosians are classic. The little pulsing veins in the back of their heads. Those aliens are extremely memorable, and you'll see some of them walking around conventions even today.
Well, one of the things that I brought up on Trek Talking was I feel like the way the Talosians were described in the original episode or in the Menagerie in the Cage was that they couldn't repair machines anymore. They basically were not physical anymore. All they could use was their minds, you know, and live these emotions. And therefore, I thought it made sense that they had women being the Talosians with the slender bodies, while in 2019, I forgot the guy's name or whatever they called the head guy, to me, he looked buffed out. I mean, not that you could see a six-pack or anything, but he definitely had wide shoulders. I mean, he looked pretty substantial, and that was a little confusing for me. Again, I could still accept it, but it was like, wow, that's some heavy dude lotion there. He's been working out instead of having dreams.
It was Arnold Schwarzenegger Talosian.
Right. Right. Maybe he was having a dream of working out in the gym. I don't know. But I wanted to back up on one thing. So the other thing about during the time period that you know, when stunt people were doing fights on Next Generation, Deep Space Nine, Voyager, is that if you had a long wig, the makeup, even though they powdered it down so it wouldn't be shiny to the camera, it was still sticky. And, you know, they were still, like, you know, it was, I can't think of the right word. It wasn't powdered makeup. It was, you know, it was like a cream makeup or whatever you would call it. Grease makeup. There we go. It's grease makeup. So you know, you're fighting and you're swinging your head and the wig comes around and it just sticks across your eyes. Sometimes we'd have to stop some takes because we couldn't see where we were going anymore.
That's funny.
So,
we're just about out of time. We've got less than 5 minutes to go. So I just want to remind everybody that's listening, it's currently Sunday night at 8:30 because we had a slight problem with the programming, but we'll be back at 7 next week. Don't worry. What are we going to talk about next week, Leslie? What do we want to discuss?
Boy, I've been trying to think of things, and actually, I would love to open this up to people on Trek Talking or the other Star Trek sites. I'd be curious if we might get some suggestions from the fans that are listening.
Yeah, so we will definitely be back next week, same bat time, same bat channel with D. Leslie Hoffman. And whatever you guys want to talk about, just go on our Facebook page and shoot us a message. You can also go to the Leslie Hoffman Appreciation Organization page on Facebook and shoot us a message there. And we will schedule a show based on whatever topic you guys want to talk about. But don't worry, because me and Leslie will be back next Sunday. And we'll find something to talk about. We always do. Right, Leslie?
Right.
Even if it's Planet of the Apes, we'll be talking about something here. And
or Frank Oz doing Yoda.
Yep, you never can tell what you're going to hear on Stunt Trek. And I just want to let you guys know that Leslie will be with us on Thursday night on Trek Talking from 7:30 to 9:30. We're going to be talking about the latest episode of Star Trek Discovery and Lieutenant Commander Arium and what happened with her, what we think happened with her. We're going to be talking about that in great length and great detail, so you want to tune in for that. We're also going to have on the show Joshua Michael Irwin and Victoria Fox, who are producers of the Star Trek fan film Demons. Well, they're working on Demons. They also produced Ghost Ship Part 1 and Part 2. We had them on the show a couple of months back when they're trying to raise money for another Star Trek project, and we're going to have them on to talk about that project. So give them a call.
You know,
646-668. Yep, go ahead.
I just watched that episode again with computers and personal computers. Their computer effects and all that kind of stuff are so far advanced to, you know, what Desilu had to work with in the 60s. I mean, it's amazing what people can do with fan films now.
It is. They look really good. And being a Star Trek fan myself, we always want to help fans get the word out and promote their projects. And so if you're producing a fan film yourself, if you're listening to this, shoot us a message and we'll get you on our show so you can share your dreams and your project with everybody. That's what we're here for. I just happen to know Ray Tessie from Stage 9. I'm sorry, not Stage 9, from the Neutral Zone Studios. And these guys worked with Ray. And so I asked Ray if he could put us in touch with them. So that's how we were able to make that all work out. But if you guys know someone that's working on a Star Trek fan film, we'll get it posted on Trek Talking so the fans can see it. And then we can have you on the show so fans can call and talk about it. And then you can, you know, answer questions and tell us about what it was like to make your dream a reality. That's what we want to help you do. So we are going to have Joshua Michael Irwin and Victoria Fox, who are the producers. Actually, Victoria stars in the Demons and Ghost Ship as Amanda Beck. So she's actually acts in it as well as produces in it. So you can check that out. That's going to be Thursday night, 7:30 to 9:30, because Orville is currently on hiatus for the next 2 weeks. So we're going to have these guys on and talk about, well, we always talk about Discovery, but Leslie will be with us as well. So you can tune in and ask Leslie questions as well on Trek Talk, and she'll be here for everything. And Comic Corner will be the first Monday of next month. We're going to have a two-hour show because we have a lot of books to talk about. I think we have five, maybe six. So we have a lot to talk about. So with that, I'm going to say good night, Leslie. It's been a real hoot talking with you, and I look forward to talking with you next week.
Oh, it's always great talking with you, Jim.
And you have a good night, and try to stay warm up there.
Yeah, I don't know. I think this week is in the 20s again. We're back to the 20s, possibly lower.
It's winter. Not that much warmer here in Vermont either. So with that, we're going to say goodnight, everybody, and make sure you check in next week. Good night, Leslie.
Good night, Jim.
Let's see what's out there. Engage.